the California FAIR Plan is created. And this is what people forget all the time. The California FAIR Plan is a private company. It is not run by the state of California. It is mandated by the state of California. It was created in order to offer fire insurance for people in high-risk areas. Very important, high-risk areas. People that had houses or log cabins in the middle of nowhere, in the mountains, completely off the grid. That's what it was created for. But the winds of change have shifted. I shouldn't use winds when I'm talking about fire. I'm sorry. But things change because now everything in California, or at least Southern California, has really changed into a high-risk area for wildfire. And that kind of goes back again to Paradise, California. Perfectly good town, good, you know, level area, all that stuff, but it's just surrounded by a lot of mountains and brush. Just all the other mountain towns, obviously going down, even in Yucaipa, let's say, Beaumont, Banning, they have a lot of mountains that circle them, and those have now become high-risk areas because they're worried about a big firestorm coming down the mountain around them and taking out those towns as well.
Today on Time Tested Mastery, Life Lessons Sell, I'm joined by someone I've had the privilege of working with for more than 20 years, Brian Walker of Ryland Insurance Services. Brian is not only an insurance professional who has written policies for me personally, but he has also served many of my clients throughout California. He's built a reputation as an expert in his field, someone who understands both the technical side of insurance and the real-world impact it has on homeowners, buyers, and the real estate industry as a whole. In today's conversation, we're going to dig into a problem that is becoming just as significant as rising interest rates, the availability and affordability of insurance in California. Brian is here to help us to understand how we got into this situation, what factors have shaped the crisis, and most importantly, what direction we're moving in towards solutions. Brian, it's great to have you here today and have you get an opportunity to share some of your wisdom with our audience.
Thank you very much. I hope the wisdom does come out, and I'm very appreciative of being here. Thank you, Mark.
I've known you for 20 plus years. I'm hoping that you can give yourself a little bit of an introduction to the audience, sort of your background and how you found yourself in the insurance business, and sort of give them your background so they know where you gathered all of this information that you're going to be sharing with them today.
Yeah, very good. I mean, long story short, 23 years ago, I was finishing up college, and it came down to, all right, what's next for me? And what I was trying to accomplish at that time really wasn't working at all. So thankfully, I was at a softball game with a friend of mine, and he basically said, hey, you should become an insurance agent. You'd be really good at it. And I was like, no, I don't even know what insurance is at that point. Like, what are you even talking about? Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I gave it a little bit of thought. I had nothing else going for me. So I said, let's try it. So I went into it and I talked to a few other people. I started investigating and doing my own research on what insurance actually was and realizing, like, hey, this isn't a bad gig. I'll try it out for a little bit and see where it takes me. So fast forward a little bit. Before I knew it, I'm taking tests and passing things. And I'm talking to my mentors and people are trying to tell me, hey, you need to go out and sell and all this other stuff. So it kind of worked out, and it just, before you know it, you know, you're a couple of years in, and then 5 years in, 10 years in, and here we are 23 years later, and I've been doing it ever since. And I couldn't imagine doing anything different than what I'm doing right now.
Wow. That's it. So like most people that get into the real estate industry, I talk with them, most of them, it was not on their horizon at all. No. I mean, not for me. So when you were growing up, what were you aspiring to be?
Yeah, no one decides, like, when you're growing up, I want to be an insurance agent someday. No, I wanted to be a police officer, actually. I have a criminal justice degree, and kind of just going through the motions and stuff, and realizing that, you know, maybe this wasn't for me. And I had, again, talking to a completely different set of people, and we realized, yeah, being a police officer probably isn't the best interest. You have other stuff and other talents you need to pursue. Why don't you try this? That's kind of where it opened my mind to, other than just being like, this is what you're going to do, this is where your life's going to be. I opened myself up, and then I was able to take other suggestions and run with those things.
Yeah.
Yeah. You never know who you're going to talk to. I think that's the important thing.
Yeah. Well, that's a good thing for a lot of our kids to hear when they're getting out of high school and getting into college. People have ideas of things that they've been told to do or things that they've wanted to do, but what we end up doing sometimes is quite different.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I love it. I mean, just the differences and everything. We'll get into that, I'm sure, as we go. But that was kind of my background thing. I mean, we talk about training, and there's a little bit of training you do when you get your license, but really, you kind of just get in front of other people and you just start going. And that's where that sales.
Yeah. Which company did you start with?
I started with Farmers Insurance. I was actually with them for 16 years. So to their credit, you know, they do a lot of great mentorship, and they do a lot of training, ongoing training for that matter too. So not only do you do the state requirements and all that, but Farmers did a great job of kind of molding things and putting the carrot out there as well, because they offer a lot of different trips and monetary gains and just basically prizes and that kind of thing. And you're like, all right, this is great. So it got going. So I was with them for 16 years. I left them, I think, about 2015. It depends how you look at it. 2015 and 2017, I was on my way out. But overall, it was a good experience because I didn't know anything about insurance. Really didn't know much about selling other than, you know, go out and talk to people. Okay. But it really came down to having good people around me and surrounding myself with other successful mentors that carried me on to make me, I don't know, call me a success, call me what you want. I don't know. It's hard to say, like, it's over, like, I'm done, I win. No, I don't know. It's ongoing thing. It's very hard to say that out loud, but it's been a good career.
Yeah. Well, and I'm going to share something with you that I don't think I've ever shared with you in any of the time that we've talked. But at the age of 21, I was a newly young married man. And a salesperson from New York Life sold me my very first life insurance policy.
21. Good. Yep. And you still have it? Yeah.
And, you know, and I still remember the conversation that I had with the salesman at the time that he did. I mean, I won't go into all of it, but he called me about 3 or 4 months later, and I ended up getting recruited for New York Life. And I went through their sales training program and ended up getting my life insurance license at the age of 21. Did get my license, but I didn't pursue it. And one of the things that I share with people a lot of times when I'm giving sales training is some of the same information that I learned from that New York Life sales training presentation. There's only 4 objections: no need, not now, not you, and can't afford it. And there's so much to learn about selling in life insurance, and in the insurance industry is a great way to learn it.
Yeah, it's hard too. I mean, if you're 21 trying to sell life insurance to people, let's just say in their 40s and 50s, it's very, very difficult to do. I mean, even just selling home insurance and auto insurance is difficult when you're in your early 20s. And I learned that. I mean, I was about mid-20s. Yeah, so and that's the unfortunate thing. A lot of people get frustrated because they're not selling to the right people and not being taken seriously at the same time with what you said. That's hard, but you need to overcome that, and you just need to double down your efforts and continue to talk to people. I always did the I always did the 3-foot rule. I mean, if you're going to sell, anybody within 3 feet of you is a potential client. So it doesn't matter. You're at the grocery store in line. You're at the bank. You're pumping gas, and the guy parked next to you. Hey, by the way, I noticed, and you insert whatever you notice about this person. Let me sell you life insurance. Now, whether you're successful or not, that's different. But the idea is you plant that seed and you get people going. So the 3-foot rule, if you're a salesperson, was always what helped me a lot. But it doesn't matter. And I always follow my wallet too. So if I pulled my wallet out to pay somebody, somebody was going to find out who I was and what I was selling. Because if they didn't want to buy from me, I didn't want to buy from them. And if I could go somewhere else, I would. But that mentality is very hard to accept, I would say. Because you can learn it, but really to accept it and really dedicate yourself to doing that, that's different. And that'll transcend to you being a realtor, to you be just selling candy bars. So.
Yeah. For some reason, it seemed like it was easier to sell houses than it was insurance at the time. So I've learned in my career to really trust and rely on the professionals, the vendors, the other people that we know that are serving us in the business. And so I value the information that you have on insurance. And so I'm hoping that you'll share that with our audience. You know, we have a tremendous insurance problem in California. I think it's nationwide, but I've worked in California and you worked in California as well. So can you sort of explain how we got there? Because really, and here's why it's so critical. Right now, the affordable insurance problem is probably a greater barrier for people buying homes than higher interest rates are. And so this is a huge problem for us. And so how did we get there?
All right. So let me preface by saying this as far as who my audience I'm talking to at this very moment, because what I'm sharing with you and your audience, Mark, is be a little bit different than someone calling me for a quote or something else. So just want to put that out there. Like, hey, that's my disclaimer. And it really depends on how far back you want to go. To me, insurance is very interesting. I'm very insurance about the history of insurance, how it comes about and all that stuff. Most people don't even know anything about anything. So Okay. Just be aware of that. I would say go back to the 90s with the earthquake that happened in Oakland. And I'm not really speaking from experience. I was still in high school at that point. But the California Earthquake Authority came in there because no one else wanted to touch earthquake insurance in California. So the CEA was created. And they came in and they said, hey, we're going to run a government program and we're going to offer earthquake insurance. Well, sounds all great to the consumer and everything else. But if you follow the economies and politics, you got one person paying, which is the government. No one else wanted to compete with the government. Okay. So we'll stop there at that. But now fast forward. What has been happening these last couple of years, a lot of it came down to everything was going fine until somewhere around the Paradise Fire. If you remember that one, huge fire, an entire town wiped out. People died. It was, atrocious what happened there. If you watch those videos, they're mind numbing, but pretty amazing things. And insurance carriers started realizing, like, hey, this is a big problem. Like, the way the town was constructed, the way the brush was around it, all of the different details about this town. So really, it came down to, let's study this a little deeper. And then somewhere along those whole lines, everything else comes in this thing called COVID. And what happened was people were out of work, not doing their own thing. So your typical progression for an insurance carrier is, every couple of years, every year, they evaluate the amount of money that they have coming in, how much their premiums are taking in, their profit, their loss, and everything else, and they can adjust on the fly. Well, when COVID happened, the government from the state of California said, we're not going to allow you to change anything because people are hurting, and we're just not going to allow you to raise your rates or make any changes to your policies. So a lot of the carriers at that point said, no, we're a private company. We can do whatever we want to. And they just decided we're not going to sell. Now, I'm summarizing a little bit, but that's kind of the idea. They just said, we're just not going to do it anymore. You got your Allstate and your State Farm being the largest. They decided we're just not going to write any new policies. And then that came down to, all right, all the little carriers that are little and they want to be little, they decided, well, we can't take on the excess policies that are coming in. We're hitting our thresholds. We need to shut down. And then it becomes a domino effect of who's going to actually write. Well, and that's kind of what happened was if the insurance carriers couldn't adjust their prices and get what they wanted from it, they just weren't going to play the game. That's it. And so they closed their books and we came in this whole thing with supply and demand where you just can't get it. So these carriers that are smaller, we started hearing about the difference in condition policies. If you follow that. And we'll get into that, but and the surplus lines carriers too. Well, a lot of things just happened where they looked at this going, we're losing money, but we can't raise our prices because the government won't allow us. We're just not going to do it. And that's kind of how we got into the whole scenario. Okay. So I'll leave it at that. You can ask the questions going forward.
I'll summarize some of the things that I hear. The audience here is primarily business people related to real estate. Hopefully, it's real estate brokers and salespeople. So it's important for them to know as much as they can about the backstory of our business. What I heard from you, a lot of policy. I mean, business and policy, business decisions and policy. And the first one is that no private business can compete with the government. And that's what happened in the early 90s. You said, when they created the California Earthquake Authority. And so once the government got in there, the rest of the carriers pulled out because they couldn't compete with the government, which created a government monopoly, basically. and I'm not a big government person, and I know that you're not either, so we'll stop.
I didn't want to put that out there in the world, really, you know, as far as how far the channel we're going, but yes, agreed.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, so we'll leave it at that. And then the second thing that I really heard clearly from what you were sharing is that a company has to earn a profit. They have to cover their expenses. And so an insurance company looks at their risk and they look at their premiums, and they can't run at a deficit. They have to balance their budgets. They have to earn a profit. They have to, you know, survive. They have to be able to stay, because they're not like the government. They can't print money. And so, you know, basically,
the shareholders too. They got, they have the shareholders looking at their profits too as well. You know, private companies, but just non-governmental companies need to have that money pouring in. And if they don't, and insurance unfortunately has a lot of money coming in and out. So these very, very large ships are very hard to turn around. That's kind of where we're at with that.
Yeah. So I appreciate you sharing that. I mean, and I know that there are, you know, realtors of all kinds of political persuasions, and it's this is not a political discussion.
Correct.
You know, it is a reality discussion about what's happening with the real estate industry. And so in the insurance industry and how it relates to that, you know, right now I know policies, you know, I was paying, I think, $1,800 a month or a year for insurance for quite a long time. And the same insurance policy now, you know, sometimes is $10,000, $12,000, $15,000, $16,000.
Let's slow down there. And I'll say, so what happens now? You fast forward, COVID happened, everything shut down. What we're seeing now is finally the Department of Insurance is realizing, like, hey, we need to reopen the markets. We need to reopen and give people these higher rates, the companies higher rates. They're allowing them. Because without getting too far in the weeds, if you put in for a 6.9% increase, they really didn't look at it. They just passed it and moved on. But a lot of these companies were losing so much money, they were asking for, 10, 15, some of these companies are asking for 60% increases on their premiums. Now, of course, 60% would just kill the market, but some are doing that still. And the Department of Insurance says, well, you can't do, let's just use round numbers. You can't do 20%, so we're going to let you do 10. And so the insurance company is like, well, we'll do 10 now, but we're still not going to take any new business. And then next quarter, we're going to apply again for 20%. And they're going to get 10, and then just this game of how high can they get it up. So understand that they're doing it quarterly. You as a insurance buyer, you're seeing your premiums every year. Well, if your premium renews on, your policy renews on, let's say, December 31st, and the carrier takes it on January 1st, they take it on, let's see, April 1st, they take it on, you know, July 1st, and then they take it on September 1st, you got 4 increases in there before you roll around in December. So now your policy, which technically on paper, it only went up, you know, 6% or 7 or 10%. And now it's 40% more because it got top on top. So it's hard to have that come down where people are just shocked at what they're doing. But that is the way that the carriers are trying to get their money back into their coffers and make sure that they have enough money to operate. And in case there is another fire like Paradise, like we just had with Pacific Palisades and Los Angeles and Malibu, that the money can be paid out for what they've lost. I mean, we haven't even talked about the fires and everything else, the California FAIR Plan, which I'm sure we'll get into that. Okay. Might be a good leader, but okay. Yeah.
So we have this series of, you know, policy constraints that are creating part of the problem. But then we have a COVID period where there's a lot of people that are hurting, and understandably so. The world was in chaos during that period of time. And so understanding that intervention to try and soften the blow for everyone, and then coming out of it, it's not being market driven, it's being policy driven. So, you know, again, it comes back to policies.
Yeah. And say this too, I kind of glossed over this, but because California is such a large market in general, which I think it's number one in the country, okay? There's such a large market, there was so much money left on the tables that the companies couldn't necessarily just stop selling business, but they wanted to stop selling fire insurance. So if your house burns down, they want to just not have that. So they created the difference in condition policy, or it's called a wrap policy, depending on who you're talking to. But that policy will cover you for everything other than the fire, lightning, there's explosion, there's riots. I mean, there's some stuff that hopefully never happens, but it'll cover you for all the other things. That way those carriers can still get some kind of premium in and still be a part of the market with their own clients and not necessarily just throw everything to the wayside. Mm-hmm. So that's why that difference in condition policy was done. Hence, what's the state of California do? The California FAIR Plan is created. So let's go there. But now, however, understand, this is what people forget all the time just because of the name California FAIR Plan. The California FAIR Plan is a private company. It is not run by the state of California. It is mandated by the state of California. The California basically helps them to decide what's going on. However, it's a private company. So it was created in order to offer fire insurance for people in high-risk areas. Very important, high-risk areas. People that had houses or log cabins in the middle of nowhere, in the mountains, you know, completely off the grid. That's what it was created for. But the winds of change have shifted. I shouldn't use winds when I'm talking about fire. I'm sorry. I apologize for that, actually. But things change because now everything in California, or at least Southern California that I'm familiar with, has really changed into a high-risk area for wildfire. And that kind of goes back again to Paradise, California. Perfectly good town, good, you know, level area, all that stuff. But it's just surrounded by a lot of mountains and brush and just other way that the town was created. So towns like Big Bear, California, and Big Lake, and just all the other mountain towns, obviously going down, even in Yucaipa, let's say, Beaumont, Banning, they have a lot of mountains that circulate them, and those have now become high-risk areas because they're worried about a big firestorm coming down the mountain around them and taking out those towns as well. It just became down to mapping as far as what is a high-risk area. With all the any town that's surrounded by any mountains or has mountains going through them or around them, that could be potentially be a high-risk area. And these carriers are looking at that, and of course they want to have the premium or raise their prices in that particular town or area to buffer themselves if there is another major fire like Paradise. So we keep going back to that. That's kind of my thing. It's always, it was eye-opening what happened in Paradise, California, and what happened in Oakland with the earthquakes.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, in my 40 years, I mean, I have some background in the fire service. And until probably 20 years ago, it did not seem like wildfires, I mean, insurance was affordable. It didn't seem, I mean, they were bad, but there weren't a lot of them. And a couple in San Bernardino, or, you know, around the Big Bear area, then there was Paradise. There was a place up in Sonoma County, I think, some years back. And then, of course, the one that's in LA. So there seems to be a lot bigger and much more costlier fires probably in the last 15 years or so, 15, 20 years, than there were in the first 20 years of my career. What I heard you say is that the insurance carriers did not want to leave California because there was other insurance, so they stopped the fire. And that's what created the California Fire, you know, the Fire Authority.
FAIR Plan.
Or the FAIR Plan. So is there any private insurance, you know, in downtown LA that is not part of the California FAIR Plan? Or is it just resort markets or high-risk areas that have to deal with that?
Okay. So a few things. Let's talk about that. It really comes down, if you're in like downtown Los Angeles, yeah, you can probably get insurance with any carrier. So the carriers a lot of them haven't stopped writing overall for certain things. So depending on the actual company. And I do a few things, like to say the beach area, you know, you're next to the ocean. Well, that's no problem with fire because they're not going to have a major fire coming through there. So those you can still find policies. And when I say companies stop writing, I'm not talking about the entire state. I'm talking mostly certain areas because a lot of companies, they won't take this, but they'll take this. And they'll take the houses in downtown, wherever. Now, there's not a whole lot of single family homes in downtown Los Angeles, but right. You know, that's what they're looking at doing. But I think it comes down, and this is my personal feeling that I kind of share, but it's a matter of where are you building to? Because I remember, I mean, I've been in California, you know, back and forth. I moved here in 96, and it was a matter of, I don't remember there being houses on certain hills. And if you look at any history down the road, like those hills or mountains burn every 10 years because the brush, of course, builds and it develops and it gets, you know, all of a sudden it dies. And then there's a lightning strike and that mountain burns. Everybody goes, oh, that's too bad that mountain burned. Well, you start running out of room and people start thinking, you know, I could put my house at the top of that mountain. And you're like, well, maybe you shouldn't put your house at the top of the mountain. And then they got, you know, 20 other homes all up and down this mountain. And then the mountain burns because of a lightning strike. And everyone's like, oh, wow, I had no idea that was going to happen. Okay. It's been happening every 10 years. Now, that's not a knock on developers or builders or anything else. But I mean, it's kind of, we just need more buffers, because I think we're getting too kind of greedy is a strong word. But we're seeing land. And we're just buying it up and then rebuilding and that kind of thing. I mean, look at Louisiana, New Orleans, and the levees. And, you know, they break every, whatever they break, they build them back stronger. Then, of course, another major hurricane comes through and they break. And everyone's like, we'll rebuild. I'm like, well, maybe you shouldn't rebuild. But I don't know. That's my personal opinion. Go with it.
Yeah, well, that makes a lot of sense. When I look back in my history, the first 20 years, there were fires, but there weren't a lot of devastating ones. And it's been the last 20, you know, years or so that they seem to have gotten more devastating. And it would make sense that the development has moved into those higher risk areas over the last 20 years because people are looking for land to build on. That makes sense to me. You know, what kind of positive movement do you see going on right now to try and address the problem legislatively or policy-wise?
Yeah, I think overall, to be honest, but I think they're doing a good job. They obviously have recognized the problem. The Department of Insurance knows there's a problem. It's not hard to find, but they're realizing now that, hey, we need to figure this out. We need to do what's best for the citizens and people, homeowners buying homes. So at least that's the first step, is acknowledging. So now but the thing is, they're working, you know, we're talking about government entities of the Department of Insurance working with private companies. And well, it's a private company. They can still do whatever they want to. You could threaten them and tell them to do all that stuff, but until the private company decides this is the direction we want to go. So I'm seeing a lot of where they're allowing to have the rate increases, like you talked about. But I mean, it's unfortunate right now for the consumer, because your policies are going up 20-30%, and it hurts. But at the same time, as soon as all of the insurance companies get the money that they need to have to back up their own programs, you'll start seeing the competition come back. Because right now, you don't see a whole lot of commercials where it's like, oh, well, you know, 15 minutes will save you 15% on your car insurance. You just don't kind of see those. You see advertisements for stuff, but you don't have this price comparison where we're lower and we're better and we're this. You know, it's the name thing. And so I think once they have enough money in there and everybody's kind of fat and happy, for lack of a better term, they're going to start saying, all right, well, now it's time to grow. We're going to be in growth mode, because a lot of companies right now just don't want to grow because they're afraid of the next whatever. And when they get to that point, you'll start seeing them compete. And like anything in capitalist society, they'll start coming down and they'll start realizing that, hey, we need to cut our fluff, cut our people, cut our whatever it is, so we can lower prices to attract more people back to our particular company. But until we get to that point, you're just not going to see anything. But so I am seeing positive change right now, only because we have to. You couldn't go up too much. So that's why I think we're good. It hurts right now as a consumer, people buying insurance, but know that there will be better days going forward.
Okay. So correct me if I'm wrong. I think what I heard is that because of the challenges that we're coming out of, at least for the last 6 or 7 years after COVID and the devastating loss, the reserves for a lot of these insurance companies are so bleak that they're not going to compete on price. They're trying to recover from the disaster, financial disaster that they've gone through. And once they get themselves back on firm footing, that's when we're going to start seeing, as consumers and real estate brokers and agents, there's going to be more competition and a little bit of help with pricing.
Correct. Yeah, that's what I'm looking at exactly. And understand too, as a consumer, even though you're just in California, you could say, I don't care about people in other states or what happens in the East Coast with hurricanes and all that. These insurance companies, you know, they're balancing out the risk. So even though you're in your little area, what happens in Nebraska or Maine or Montana, if those companies are in those states, they're collecting money from them and subsidizing your losses. But someday they're going to have losses, so your policy is going to subsidize theirs. And it's really this collective thing where, you know, you got to pay attention to what's going on around the country. And of course, East Coast got hammered by the hurricanes, 100-year storms and all that, the floods. You know, you never see that, the devastation that happened in East Tennessee and North Carolina. But those affect you in California, because insurance companies got paid for those too.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, talking with people all across the country, California is not the only place that's having struggles with insurance. Florida certainly is as well. Yeah, awesome. Okay. So, you know, looking ahead, what do you expect when you see the dust settle?
I think at this point, a lot of it comes down to technology as well. I think that we're seeing more artificial intelligence coming into play in the insurance world. And that has to do with the high risk areas and identifying where high risk areas are before they're a problem. So they're looking at brush growth and just the buffer zones and how far away people are. And technology too, you're saying, all right, where's the nearest fire hydrant? Where's the nearest fire station? And they're going to start putting things in place where they're like, we need a hydrant here. And they wouldn't know that. I mean, they wouldn't have known that 5 years ago. They certainly would have known it 10 years ago. But they're looking at maps. Artificial intelligence is looking at response times, how fast they can get there, how fast they can maneuver trucks around. I mean, there's a whole thing going on right now, a revolution with computers. Just understanding more of how fires move and how to protect yourselves. And so technology, too, with houses, if you got to rebuild a house now, more than likely you got to put interior sprinklers into your house, which that could help as well. I'm waiting to see outdoor sprinklers, like on fire suppressant sprinklers on your house, not your lawn, but I'm talking outside. I could see those going into play. I could see some certain areas, too, where they literally have outdoor fire suppressant sprinklers that are put on by the state in order to fight fires from the ground level. Then you got air technology, you got planes and helicopters getting better. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. And then I think, too, one thing we're seeing now with developers and builders, we're seeing them plan their developments better. And the planning commissions in certain municipalities are not allowing people to build because they know there's going to be a problem or a potential problem. The example of that is, like, if you got to have two exits, or ingress and egress. A lot of these houses, the developments that went up in flames, unfortunately, had one way in, one way out. So number one, of course, loss of life. You want to make sure people can leave, but you also need to get the trucks in. So if everybody's rushing out the one egress that they have, but the trucks can't come in to fight the fires, now we're seeing the planning commissions come in where the ingress and egress, and when they start saying, hey, we need two exits or two entrances into this development. Because again, if there is a major problem, fire, hurricane, depending on where you're at, what's happening with this, people are going to be rushing out. You want to be able to make sure people can come in to fight the fires and the fire department can get in there and obviously have enough water too. So I think we're getting a lot better planning overall. And I think that's going to help in the long run. Of course, and God forbid we actually see another huge catastrophe, but we might avoid those things.
I have a whole lot better understanding now of sort of where we're at with it. What would you suggest for people that are, home buyers today, real estate brokers, what can they do to make their experience in buying property and obtaining insurance easier? I mean, or do you have any tips for them?
And again, I'm going to speak to you differently and your audience differently now than I would if you called me for a quote. Okay. And, the overall thing is make sure, number one, you're buying the house. Because I get a lot of people that say, hey, I heard insurance is really high. Can I get a quote? I'm thinking about buying this house. All right. Well, the problem was I can give you a quote today, no problem. But the way the industry was changing and pretty much, I imagine, would continue to change, it could change by the time you get 30 days outside of escrow and you actually do go enter escrow with your house. So a lot of these people, I just tell them, listen, I can't do much for you until 30 days before you close escrow. It's a hard thing to say. It's a hard thing to do. A lot of times, too, people have homes and their current policy is expiring. Well, legally, the companies have to tell you like 60 days or maybe even longer now when you're expiring. But we still can't quote you until 30 days out because the market changes so much. So I apologize and I'm sorry, but at the same time, we can't help you until we're 30 days out. So just, if you like your house, don't make your insurance the reason you buy a house or keep your house. Because I get a lot of that too, is can I afford that? Well, if you're not sure if you can afford the insurance, probably don't buy the house. But again, that's just the opinion between us and the audience. So not your client, Mr. and Mrs. Realtor.
Yeah.
So that's what I look at. Just tell them, you know what? Insurance is a situation that you need to be prepared to pay a higher premium than you're used to paying, but it's worth it. This is why it's worth it. It's worth it because of your view and all the and you can fill in the blanks as a realtor and resell that home. But honestly, that's the thing we look at too, where we try and do our best to comfort people. But people call me every day and they're like, hey, my policy went up $2,000, $3,000, $5,000. And I'm like, all right, I'll try and shop you, but I don't have very many options anyway. So that will change. It will get better. I am an optimist in this whole thing. And I think that, give it a couple buying cycles and we'll be right back on track where we need to be.
So Brian, thank you for sharing your expertise with us today. Insurance has become one of the biggest challenges facing homeowners and buyers in California. And I know our listeners will walk away with a much clearer understanding of both the problem and the path forward. And to our audience, if today's conversation helped you, I ask you to share it with another agent or anyone you know that might benefit from this perspective. The more we understand these challenges, the better we can serve the people who are counting on us. And at Time-Tested Mastery, my mission is simple: real skills, real change. I want to thank you for listening, and until next time, keep learning, keep growing, and keep building the life you were made for.